This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
In our never-ending search for economic indicators, may we present steel.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with a global perspective on business and economics. To make the world economy go, you need steel. So it's useful information this morning that the world's biggest steel company reported its profits were down, although the forecast was brighter. You may not know the name ArcelorMittal, based in Luxembourg, but it's huge. Marketplace's Amy Scott has more on steel's challenges.
Let's start with the weak global economy. Companies just aren't building as many office towers or cars, especially in Europe, where ArcelorMittal is based. Chuck Bradford is a steel analyst with Bradford Research.
They've got a very large segment of the business in Europe, and that's not looking too pretty.
The bigger problem, though, is China, says Michelle Applebaum with research firm Steel Market Intelligence. With weaker demand there, too, China is producing far more steel than it can use and exporting it.
That kind of creates the tsunami of overcapacity in the rest of the world from their exports.
And that's driving global steel prices down. Not great for steel company profits, but good for consumers. Applebaum says in a $25,000 car, the steel might cost just $1,200. It's such a small part of the overall cost, she says customers won't see a big difference. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Finance ministers and central bankers from the group of seven big economic powers, U.S. included, hold informal talks in a stately home near London today. Germany's finance chief is in for a roasting over the hot topic of austerity. Here's Marketplace's Stephen Beard.
The U.S. will lead the onslaught, urging the Germans to go for growth and ease up on austerity, to slacken their demand that debt-laden Eurozone countries cut their public spending. France will add to the Germany bashing, and the new anti-austerity Italian finance minister will join in. But the Germans insist that all this criticism is misplaced. They've already shifted ground. France and Spain have been given an extra 2 years to cut their budgets. And anyway, says German analyst Constanze Stelzenmüller, German policy has been misunderstood.
The Chancellor, in all fairness, would say this is not about just cutting debt or austerity. It's about structural reforms to national markets and in particular labour and services markets to enable growth.
And Germany does have at least one ally at the meeting, the Brits. Yesterday, Prime Minister David Cameron said we need to go on cutting our deficit, but at a sensible, measured pace. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. The big numbers story is the Japanese yen sliding to a four-year low. That's lifting the Japanese economy, but a stronger dollar can hurt U.S. exporters. The dollar is up to 101.3 yen this morning. In stocks, the London FTSE is up 0.6% now.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
Amid the debate over immigration, consider this. People who are born in one country but move somewhere else have an estimated $400 billion in savings. And sometimes the old country comes back to the emigrants with an offer, lend us money. Dan Leinervoss teaches sociology at the University of Southern California and has written a book about what are called diaspora bonds. Professor, good morning.
Thank you.
So help me understand this. Say I'm from, Italy. And I make it big in the United States, but I still love Italy and want some of my cash to help the old country. I could send the money directly to my uncle Salvio in Torre del Greco, or I could do what?
Well, in some cases, you can buy diaspora bonds, which are basically a type of security that governments offer to members of the nation that live abroad as a way of getting more money than they can possibly get through philanthropy or regular financial markets.
And of course, there's going to be risk depending on the country.
Typically, like diaspora bonds will carry considerable risk. Otherwise, there wouldn't be no point in issuing those bonds. Governments usually do that because they don't have access to regular financial markets, precisely because it's so risky.
What might the foreign country do with the money that you've invested? Anything, or is it targeted towards specific projects?
Well, the advantage of diaspora bonds from the perspective of the issuing country is that, first, it goes to the state. So it can be used to fund large infrastructure projects. Israel is using it for railroads and desalinization projects, something that remittances would not quite do. In general, in comparison with philanthropy, it's relatively free of strings.
It was pointed out that one challenge to this idea is people will have very direct experiences about whether or not the home government is worthy of trust or not. And this is something that requires trust because you're handing over money for years.
Right. And the trust is also something that is built over time. In the Irish case that I studied, many Irish Americans were willing to trust their government, but there were all kinds of misorganizations in the process of issuing the bonds and sending them to the subscribers, such that a year later, when they tried to do it again, they couldn't find enough organizers that would risk their good name by selling these bonds.
USC's Dan Leiner-Voss is author of a book about diaspora bonds as used by Irish Americans and Jewish Americans. It's called Sinews of the Nation. Professor, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And the rich get richer, and so do bacteria. A new UCLA study published in Nature finds that germs behave a lot like the wealthy. By being at the right place at the right time and making the most of community resources, the researchers said a small number of microbes get a leg up on all the others. There's already a mathematical model for why a small group of people control the majority's wealth. Researchers found it also applies to the way some bacteria fester into hard-to-treat infections. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.